Listening Library presents The Prydain Chronicles, Volume 3, The Castle of Lear, by Lloyd Alexander. Read for you by James Langton.
Author's Note by Lloyd Alexander. In this chronicle of Prydain, following the Book of Three and the Black Cauldron, what befalls the heroine is as important and perilous as the hero's own quest. Princess Ailanwy of the Red Gold Hair does much more than face the unavoidable, and in her view absolutely unnecessary, ordeal of becoming a young lady. As Dalban, the old enchanter, warns, "For each of us comes a time when we must be more than what we are." And this holds true for princesses as well as for assistant pig-keepers. The Castle of Lear is, in a sense, more romantic than the preceding chronicles. Taron is noticeably aware of his feelings toward Ailanwy, and it is sometimes more comic. For example, the utter despair of the companions in trying to cope with the well-meaning but hapless Prince Rune. The mood perhaps is bittersweet, rather than grandly heroic. But the adventure should hold something beyond the fairy tale elements of a magic golden bauble, a vengeful queen, a mysterious castle, and rivals for the hand of a princess. The nature of fantasy allows happenings which reveal most clearly our own frailties and our own strengths. The inhabitants of Prydain are fantasy figures. I hope they are also very human. Prydain itself, however, is entirely imaginary. Mona, background for the Castle of Lear, is the ancient Welsh name of the island of Anglesey. But this background is not drawn with a mapmaker's accuracy. My hope, instead, is to create the feeling, not the fact, of the land of Wales and its legends. Some readers may indignantly question the fate of several villains in this tale, especially that of one of the most reprehensible scoundrels in Prydain. I should point out that while the Castle of Lear, like the previous books, can stand as a chronicle in its own right, certain events in it have far-reaching consequences. Beyond that, I will hit no further, but only recommend one of the more difficult virtues, patience.
Chapter 1. Prince Rune. Ailanwy of the Red Gold Hair, the Princess Ailanwy, daughter of Angarad, daughter of Rigat, of the Royal House of Lear, was leaving Caer Dalban. Dalban himself had so ordered it, and though Taran's heart was suddenly and strangely heavy, he knew there was no gainsaying the old enchanter's words. On the spring morning set for Ailanwy's departure, Taran saddled the horses and led them from the stable. The princess, looking desperately cheerful, had wrapped her few belongings in a small bundle slung from her shoulder. At her neck hung a fine chain and crescent moon of silver. On her finger she wore a ring of ancient craftsmanship, and in the fold of her cloak she carried another of her most prized possessions, the golden sphere that shone at her command with a light brighter than a flaming torch. Dalban, whose face was more careworn than usual, and whose back was bowed as though under a heavy burden, embraced the girl at the cottage door.
"You shall always have a place in Caer Dalban," he said, "and a larger one in my heart. But, alas, raising a young lady is a mystery beyond even an enchanter's skill. I have had," he added with a quick smile, "difficulties enough raising an assistant pig-keeper." "I wish you a fair voyage to the Isle of Mona," Dalban went on. "King Rudlam and Queen Teleria are kindly and gracious. They are eager to stand in your family's stead and serve as your protectors. And from Queen Teleria, you shall learn how a princess should behave." "What!" cried Alanwy. "I don't care about being a princess. And since I'm already a young lady, how else could I behave? That's like asking a fish to learn how to swim."
"Hem," Dolwyn said wryly. "I have never seen a fish with skinned knees, torn robe, and unshod feet. They would ill become him, as they ill become you."
He set a gnarled hand gently on Ilanwy's shoulder.
"Child, child, do you not see? For each of us comes a time when we must be more than what we are."
He turned now to Taran.
"Watch over her carefully," he said. "I have certain misgivings about letting you and Gergi go with her, but if it will ease your parting, so be it."
"The Princess Ilan, we shall go safely to Mona," Taran answered.
"And you," said Dalban, "return safely. My heart will not be at ease until you do."
He embraced the girl again and went quickly into the cottage. It had been decided that Carl would accompany them to Great Avrin Harbour and lead back the horses. The stout old warrior, already mounted, waited patiently. Shaggy-haired Gergi, astride his pony, looked as mournful as an owl with a stomachache. Kor, the tame crow, perched in unwonted silence on Taran's saddle. Taran helped Ilanwy mount Luago, her favourite steed, then swung to the back of Melinlas, his silver-maned stallion. Leaving Caer Dalban behind, the little band set out across the soft hills toward Avrin. Side by side, Taran and Carl rode ahead of the others to lead the way, Kor, meanwhile, having made himself comfortable on Taran's shoulder. "She never stopped talking for a moment," Taran said gloomily. "Now at least it will be quieter in Caer Dalban."
"That it will," said Carl.
"And less to worry about. She was always getting into one scrape or another."
"That too," said Carl.
"It's for the best," Taran said. "Ilanwy is, after all, a princess of Lyr. It's not as if she were only an assistant pig-keeper."
"Very true,"
said Carl, looking off toward the pale hills. They jogged along silently for a while. "I shall miss her," Taran burst out at last, half angrily. The old warrior grinned and rubbed his shining bald head.
"Did you tell her that?"
Not exactly," faltered Taran. "I suppose I should have, but every time I began talking about it, I felt very odd. Besides, you never know what silly remark she'll come up with when you're trying to be serious."
"It may be," replied Carl, smiling. "We know least what we treasure most. But we will have more than enough to keep us busy when you come back, and you will learn, my boy, there is nothing like work to put the heart at rest."
Taran nodded sadly. "I suppose so," he said. Past midday they turned their horses to the west, where the hills began a long slope downward into the Avrin Valley. At the last ridge, Kor hopped from Taran's shoulder and flapped aloft, croaking with excitement. Taran urged Melinlas over the rise. Below, the great river swung into view, wider here than he had ever seen it. Sunlight flecked the water in the sheltered curve of the harbour. A long, slender craft bobbed at the shore. Taran could make out figures aboard, hauling on ropes to raise a square, white sail. Ilanwy and Gergi had also ridden forward. Taran's heart leapt. And to all the companions, the sight of the harbour and the waiting vessel was like a sea wind driving sorrow before it. Ilanwy began chattering gaily, and Gergi waved his arms so wildly he nearly tumbled from the saddle.
"Yes, oh yes," he cried. "Bold, valiant Gergi is glad to follow kindly master and noble princess with boatings and floatings."
They cantered down the slope and dismounted at the water's edge. Seeing them, the sailors ran a plank out from the vessel to the shore. No sooner had they done so than a young man clambered onto the plank and hastened with eager strides toward the companions. But he had taken only a few paces along the swaying board when...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?